plugged in and ready to go?
Lights on, Madam Chair.
We're missing some folks. Want to see how
good evening, everyone.
Who's not here?
Welcome to our Joint Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization this fine Monday night, May 8th, 2017. I believe it's fair to say with some great anticipation, it's a pleasure to open this meeting tonight. When we started, just about a year ago on this journey. And tonight we will be having a very welcome presentation from Senator Boquist and Senator Beyer, which is the culmination of all the work that has been done over the past year in our travels around the state, looking at the work that the Oregon Transportation Commission and the Governor's Vision Panel produced, with our work groups that were very, very busy for a number of weeks working on issues that face us as we make decisions about how we want to invest in our transportation system moving forward. So I welcome the two senators here tonight to walk us through this presentation. I think it would be appropriate tonight, if we have questions until the end, let them get through the details of this process. We have a set of questions that we have already proposed for the committee for Wednesday night's discussion. Those are before you as well. But we have a great deal of information to get through tonight. So if you don't mind, we'll hold questions until our good colleagues have completed their presentation. Gentlemen, please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Lee Beyer, State Senator from District 6, and you already did part of what I was going to say, so we can just move on. You do have the slides as well there. We'd encourage you, as we talk along, if you got questions, to write a note there, and then we can happy to get to those at the end, as well as certainly on Wednesday for the discussion. So we're going to start off here. So as we're all very familiar with, we've been spending a lot of time on this. It's almost been a year since we started this process. So we started off listening to the governor's panel that had spent a year looking across the state. And we did our 11 meetings across the state and heard quite a bit of testimony. And I think the piece, if you look at that, what we heard is let's protect the public's investment. That's what we heard loudly from people. We heard a lot in every place, particularly from the business community, to take care of the traffic congestion that's slowing things down. Preserve the quality of life, again. Keep Oregon's economy moving. Prepare for the seismic event that they keep telling us will happen. Handle the transportation alternatives for the elderly, the young, the disabled, and particularly those who are finding themselves not able to afford a car to get to work back. We heard that from both them and their businesses. Trying to move the system back towards a user pay system as it originally was in 1917 when Oregon started all of this. And try to do this in a way that doesn't happen all at once, but expanded in a 10-year finance plan with a goal or a look towards a 20-year improvement program to get us back on track. So you've seen all of that. So like I say, the goals were to do a 20-year plan, 10-year phase in of the financing for it, address the congestion through collaborative partnerships with local governments, protect the protect the assets that we have out there, move back towards users pay, as I said, increase accountability, assure the public that the money that they give us is going to be well spent, support economic expansion, particularly with freights, take care of the bridges and improve the transit access, and really, the, as I said, move freight efficiently. So we're sort of there.
So, colleagues, what we've done for the last couple of weeks is instead of come forth and say, here's the plan, we've spent most of our time trying to deconflict and put together the results of the five work groups that you all sat on. So what we're putting forth to you is, after we've deconflicted the various places, is what we think we heard amongst everyone on the committee. And the intent tonight is basically to outline you what that is and what it looks like when you put it all together in one series. And then have you think about it, ask some questions, and then on Wednesday come back and decide, start deciding and discussing which portions we all agree we want to do in the plan, so that LC can go forth and start drafting after that. Again, this is what we think we heard, and we're looking forward to all of your input. And on Wednesday night, your red X's, your adding, and everything else. And we'll talk about that briefly at the end. The very first group that we talked about when we had the presentation, of course, you remember this, was the maintenance and seismic and preservation group that was forward. I don't think there's any news to here. You all recall the bridges are broke. You'll see half of them are in red that are here, in which that they need repairs. They were built before 1974, and that pretty much spans the entire state. That's not just cities and counties, but across the statewide. I think everybody heard loud and clear from Representative Benson that groups, you know, about the pavement commissions in the state. We also heard that we really don't have a statewide standardization. This is something we need to address in the bill going forward. So we set one standard so everybody is using the same very good, good, poor, so on and so forth to do this. The large question we all have asked that came out of the preservation and seismic group is we're spending 30 cents now. And we have about 14.6 in equivalent. That's title and registration fees and other fees that are out there. And why isn't it enough? We think we heard very clearly that we've underfunded transportation for decades. We know the cost of replacing the bridges are billions. We know that traffic congestion is turning into gridlock, and that's not just gridlock in Portland metro area. We know that we have the same problems in funnels and choke points along the Interstate 5 corridor all the way to Medford and places, and ironically enough, some in the areas out in eastern Oregon, too. We know that a growing population creates more traffic. We know about the seismic threat. We certainly saw on the eastern side some pretty extreme weather this year, almost like looking at Alaska, where you have hard freezes and thaws and the impact of that. We also know that labor is increasing as materials. And the other issue that we face, unfortunately, with a 30 cent or with a even a penny gas tax is a simple fact that higher fuel economy means we get less gas tax revenue back. And the bottom line is we need to move towards a user-to-cost ratio into the 21st century. Again, just a refresher for what we've heard before, the preservation, maintenance, and seismic. Once again, we heard the need to think long-term, try and develop a 20-year recovery plan with a 10-year financing payment phased in. And this is a quote that was actually out of the preservation work group slide. A 20-year period of disinvestment has created a shortfall that cannot be made up in 1 year. One of the challenges we face, as we all know, is that the money you pay at the pump and the title registrations that you pay and the fees for that must go to roads and bridges under the Constitution. That creates both opportunity and an obstacle to future development. Our problem is how do you fund a holistic transportation system and still cut mustard with Article 9 of the Constitution. Okay? So, highway fund and the discussions that we had previously, you'll remember at the very end of my presentation, I put together a consolidated worksheet. It looks very similar to this right here. You have a copy of that, again, in front of you. For one of the good senators up there, if it's on 11 by 17, I'll answer the question. So if you look across to the right at year 8 and 9, you'll see why the numbers are the way they are. This particular spreadsheet, once again, is available online. We'll email it back out to you. And we're going to address this by sectors. And so what I'm going to start with is the highway fund. And we discussed in that initial discussion back then of doing a 6-cent initial gas tax and 8 cents phased in over 10 years. That generates about $5.09 billion in investments for city, state, and county roads. We talked about in that same presentation back then a tiered title fee of $20 and another phase in over 10 years of another $20. We're going to come back to that tiered concept, and same thing in tiered registration. This is sort of a review that we've gone back and looked at ourselves. If you look at user pays in a tiering mechanism, if you recall on this particular slide, the lowest mileage, if you look in the lower right-hand side or in your slide in front of you, lowest mileage pays a lower fee. The reason that works that way is that the lowest mileage is also using the gas tax, okay, across there. So what we're trying to do in a tiered registration fee is identify those that tiering so that you do a 10, 20, 30 example and then build it up farther into the future. If you do a proposed phase-in like we're talking about that was initially proposed in the committee before, it generates about $5 billion. And if you look down below, 50% of the state is about $2.5 billion over 10 years to the state. About 30% of that goes to the counties, which is $1.5 billion over 10 years. We've all heard of the county needs. And then 20% to the cities. And the important part, again, is this portion is dedicated constitutional highway funds. And that's where it has to be spent. We talked about small counties and cities, and what do we do for those? For example, in the small counties, we know that there is larger need in the smaller counties that are out there. Due to the hard work of Associated Oregon Counties, they actually put together a plan in which we agree with their recommendation at the moment. We'll wait and see what you all have to say, and that is the county, out of their allocation, would put $5 million towards in a tiered effort in a plan that they developed themselves spread over 29 counties. We heard a lot about small cities and the need for small cities under 5,000. There's about 166 of these cities out there. We looked at the initial plan that the cities had put forth. It was about $2 million. I think we all heard that if you had $50,000 in a city, you didn't go very far, and it didn't work very well. So we looked at this and looked at the funding streams that are out there and are suggesting that instead do $5 million annually, which is the cities donating instead of $2 million amongst their allocation, $2.5 million, and then we would match out of the state side of the allocation another $2.5 million. And then these projects, instead of being decided by outsiders, we would develop an advisory board of those small cities. That advisory board, of course, would review the projects from their own small cities and make the recommendations going forward. Transit and bike.
So transit and bikes, we looked at that. That was the work group that Senator Taylor, Monroe, and I were on. We had a lot of involvement. And again, the end of the discussion, we were trying to increase the frequency and reach for urban systems, increase access to medical and housing. One of the things we've heard a lot is people are having to live farther out to get cheaper housing, and they need help getting into their work and other connections there. Trying to increase and develop a better rural transportation system, regionalized. We've got 100 and some independent agencies, mostly funded around human resources, that don't connect very well together. Improving that and connecting those systems, if you will, to the inner city buses. So if you're on the coast, for example, your local system will take you to a station where you can get on a bus that'll take you into Salem, for example, and you can then get on the Salem system and get to your medical appointment or whatever. So that's kind of the notion we have there. Obviously, we can't fund this through the constitutionally restricted road funds. It is more of a general fund or social service, if you will, so it makes sense that everybody should pay into that. Currently, most of the transit is funded by businesses, either through a business-side payroll tax or in other areas through a business-side property tax that they pay for predominantly. What this proposal is that we would have a very small general payroll tax of 1/10 of 1%, And the contrast or the comparison on that would be that for a minimum wage worker, that's about 39 cents a week. And you can see it's a little bit more for others, but it's not very much at all for anybody. That money would be allocated under a formula basis, 10% up for grants for equipment, 4% for the inner city transit, and 1% for ODOT to help form those regions together. Another piece we were looking at was safety programs. We've heard a lot about the safe routes to schools. We are recommending $10 million be allocated, and this was out of road funds. That would be allocated on a granting basis with local match on that. And what that would get you is over 10 years, you would complete a quarter mile safe routes to schools for every elementary and middle school in the state. The other side, the general safety program, is called the ARTS program, or All Roads Transportation. We again recommending that $10 million be allocated to that on an annual basis. What that will get you is over 10 years, we'd be able to address the 450 plus or minus most dangerous transportation problems in the state. So making some significant improvement, good results. Biking was the last piece, and one of the things we keep in mind that under the current law, 1% of all road funds go to on-street bicycle and sidewalk programs. We have suggested that we add to that $15 million on an annual basis to take care of the off-road commuter routes that are in the cities to help people use an alternative to get out of the way of the trucks. 5% of that would, or that money would come from a 5% bicycle tax, which generates about $4 million, $7 million from Connect Oregon, separated out. That's currently the way it is. It's in competition now. And $4 million for so-called linear parks that is part of the Parks Lottery program now in statewide NAP. So that gets you there. Then the next section is the multimodal section. That was the group that was led by Representative McCowan and also Representative Oldman and Representative Smith. McEwen, excuse me.
Thank you,
I always get tied up there. I'm sorry, Caddy.
Nice catch.
I get it right about a third of the time.
You're getting better.
That system we looked at and broken into having taken the bicycles out, we're looking at splitting that, again, trying to maintain a $100 million biennial program for Connect Oregon. 53% of that would be to regional programs, and then $40 million of it, projects of statewide significance. Then we're looking at a marine dredging and derelict vessels fund, which would come from a 2-cent redistribution of the marine fuel tax. That's the ones we've all heard over the years about the number of boats that are sitting in the harbors that are sitting there and they can't get them out. This is to help do that and do dredging in the small harbors. Back to you.
And the one thing to close up on that is I think we're going to see on the May revenue forecast, as we know, the problem we face is that the lottery is a declining source of revenue long-term because of its other commitments. We'll see what happens with the Center Casino up north, but one of the challenges we're facing in multimodal is where is the new funding source going to come from at some time in the future? And that's an issue that we'll be addressing and discussing on Wednesday night. The Congestion and Freight Mobility Work Group, I think you're familiar with that. The fact that congestion was an issue across the entire state, any one of us that has to drive north or to the east has to go up through Portland. And in fact, as I mentioned before, even in Salem, even in Albany, and even in some of the other southern areas, you have congestion problems. Many times on the weekends, it turns into a parking lot all the way from Eugene to Portland across the board. Congestion relief, we did, as you've seen this slide before, we did look at it as a statewide. There were freight mobility studies that were done and congestion relief studies. This is all, not news to you. Obviously, the yellow areas and the white writing are areas around the state that need to be addressed. The major areas to the north of us in the metro area were identified even in the farmlands of eastern Oregon and in the wheat fields and the straw fields of my district outside of Portland as being a constraint. Since the last time we were here, we had a discussion in one of my committees in which we're now trying to figure out just exactly how to move 30,000 truckloads of compressed straw out of my district across the river to the north, because it used to go out through the Port of Portland. We wish it was going out through the Port of Coos Bay, but it's not. And at this point, it is just a growing and growing congestion issue just to move low-end agricultural projects. You'll remember that these projects here that are identified, that are on the screen, the I-5 Rose Corridor was the number one project in the list, which we're going to get through, several on 2017, I-205 Abernathy Bridge, I-205 widening. And then in addition to that, you'll recall we talked about what do we do with the orphan highways at Cornelius Pass, going over to from the county to ODOT, Powell Boulevard, ODOT to the city, and then even in Eugene Springfield for the last two sessions in a row, the issue of Territorial Highway to the county and Delta Highway to ODOT. Again, just a quick review of the orphan highways we've identified out there that have been ongoing for at least the last, 6 years, to my knowledge, if not longer. And, of course, I'm not, like many of you, an expert on transportation, so this is all new to me. The course of action that was brought forward by the congestion work group, just a refresher of that so you understand what that is. The important part of it is the first five projects I mentioned before, Rose Corridor, I-205, 217. They call them three projects. I call them five because there's different segments. The proposal that was put forth in discussions with our urban colleagues up in the Portland area is the state picking up half of the share of those projects, and the state, that was what SMPO means. MPO, remember, is Metropolitan Planning Organization. We just put a small S on it. Legislative Council hasn't come up with a good name yet. They will at some point after your input for these state MPOs. The other remaining 6, 7, 8, and 9 projects that are on there actually are, instead of being shared, are immediate relief projects that are in planning. The zip lane, if you don't recall what that was, the zip lane is in areas in which we can have 5 and 6 lanes and where we can actually move the medium in order to increase traffic flow immediately and reduce congestion immediately instead of waiting for major projects 5 or 6 years out in front of us. What is also in here, as we talked about, which is an important key piece, is the line number 7, congestion pricing and pre-construction tolling. While not popular at all times, the issue that we have in front of us, I'm going to talk about in a few minutes of, we simply can't buy our way out of congestion at this point. And then the active traffic management, and in total about $1.1 billion congestion and freight relief projects in the northern area. You remember the time phase sequence. You would be surprised how difficult it is to take a simple chart like this and then start writing it out and say this project is possible, but it has to start on this date. And we spend an enormous amount of time identifying those starting and ending dates and when you can begin and end those projects in a time phase sequence that actually makes sense. As I mentioned, this is the problem we face. We came out of the congestion work group. The four of us spent a lot of time discussing this and trying to figure it out. Bottom line is we cannot tax and build our way out of congestion. We simply don't have the funds to do that. The only way forward in looking at the state of Washington and elsewhere and with federal law and federal constraints is to start looking at pre-congestion tolling into the future. And the first two areas, and I think it's not, I'll say the three magic letters we're not supposed to say, but CRC, those studies told us when you do pre-construction tolling that you have to unfortunately do it on both of the major arteries in Portland, which is I-205 and Rose Corridor. The question for the committee would be, if we're going to go forward with that, do we do it all, which is one option, or do you provide free lanes and free accesses in some of the areas and so you don't infect the poor quite as much? As we pointed out in congestion pricing over the next couple of years in front of us, no matter how much we build, let me say it again, no matter how much we build, even if the public wanted to give us 30, 40, 50 cent gas tax increase, we cannot build our way out of congestion due to a whole host of reasons, from land use planning to everything else in the Portland area or even in areas like Albany, Salem, along the freeways in that area. And so what we need to do, and has been successful areas elsewhere, is, again, address that traffic backup in the future in terms of congestion pricing. The ideal areas in discussing this from the CRC reports or the state treasurer have not changed over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, and that is unfortunately or fortunately, whatever, I-5 Willamette to the Columbia River. The question again is do you do this, do you provide free lanes in addition to congestion pricing lanes? Or how do you do that? One of the interesting discussions that's gone forward that we're having right now, just call your attention to the lower right-hand corner, is that we have ongoing discussions because the state to the north of us is upgrading their system. So the question is, would we, in fact, build our own backroom computer systems and all that stuff, or will we contract maybe with a neighboring state to do that? In the plan that you have before us, though, the front end, in the state of Washington, when they did tolling and when they did congestion pricing, I did not know this, but they have commercialized DMVs. And so therefore, when they did tolling and congestion pricing in the state of Washington, what they had to do is open up storefronts. And what we're saying is we already have DMV offices across the state, so why wouldn't we use the DMV offices as our storefront and the front end and then look at the issue of contracting behind? And we'll have more discussions on that, obviously, on Wednesday. The way to the way forward that we discussed previously, and a little bit more detail here, but I do want to go through it so you understand the mechanisms of it, is instead of using the gas tax as we have done before and taking those fundings away from preservation, maintenance, and seismic, as was done several weeks ago, proposed a new vehicle privilege tax or dealer privilege tax, 1% initially. It's new vehicles only. It's the proposal. Same discussion that we had several weeks ago. From that, and I'm going to talk a little bit more in detail, and you have some details in front of you, is we would create a statewide congestion and carbon relief fund. Let's talk about the carbon relief fund. That's not particularly a green, let's go build green things. What that is the notion behind that is that if you have a highway system, here's a prime example, a highway system that is clogged up and you were to move freight and trucks off that onto rail, for example, or into an intermodal or multimodal facility, that's the sort of projects we're talking about. What we're talking about is items that literally take truck traffic or reduce congestion on the roads for that. Most of the mechanisms we propose in here are 50% cost shares. You remember we talked about the 8 MPOs across the state. The trick here that we will probably be challenged in court, if there's such a thing as a friendly lawsuit, that's what you might call it, but a vehicle privilege tax like this is outside Article 9 of the Constitution. It's a simple fact we have to decide. If we do go forward with this, we will likely be challenged in court simply to find out whether it's constitutional or not, so that we have it done and decided early on and up front. One of the requirements which we have to always pay attention to ourselves in a type of fund like this is that since it's not in the Constitution, you have to have very strict statutory language, and we have to have very strict legislative discipline, because everybody in this room is senior enough to know the three magic words notwithstanding. We can write a perfect law that says you can do XYZ only with these funds, and they must be used for highway purposes or pulling cars and or pulling trucks off the highway and putting them in another mode so that we reduce congestion, but the legislature does have the authority to simply change the law. So that is a problem in the future. The next mechanism is in here, since it is outside Article 9 of the Constitution and the lottery fund is going down, the question we have to ask ourselves and the 14 members, is this a potential future source for a small amount of it to be dedicated to Connect Oregon and those functions in Connect Oregon that in fact reduce freight traffic on roads? The other issue we have to decide if we're going to go forward with this is in order to capture all of the revenue available, you either do it inside the state of Oregon on a privilege tax, and then you have what's an out-of-state user fee at DMV. That means if you buy it outside. That's a question and a policy question. Do we want to do it just inside the state of Oregon, or do we require that vehicles were purchased outside of the state of Oregon and would be applied to this? And then the last thing on this is, do we increase the rate in the future years that are out there? The important part about this particular fee is even with it, we are still less expensive to register and purchase vehicles in Oregon with this proposed fee than we would be in the state of Washington or we would see in Idaho. The trick is you don't raise your fee, so you force people to leave Oregon and do business across the river. How does this work? There's a lot of material on here. And I'm going to kind of skim through it, not because to blow over the top of it, but more because the fact that it's hard to see the print up there. You have a one-page paper front and back in front of you. I made sure it was in 14 bold print for those of you that are my age and older, and for those of you younger, you can look at the screen up here. But that way you can look at how the Congestion Relief Fund, and this was in our work group, and most of you have seen this before. I just want to talk you through it a little bit so you understand how this Congestion Relief Fund would work, because this would frankly become the major project funding source in the future. Let me say that again. Instead of taking gas tax dollars all the time and bonding them and doing a large program out of that and then have nothing left over for maintenance over in Harney County, nothing left for maintenance in Umatilla County, nothing left for maintenance in Clackamas County, you would use this particular fund and this particular structure to fund major projects in the future. It is would be a standalone account outside of the highway fund. The Treasury has looked at this and made the suggestion of the Transportation Infrastructure Fund, which already exists. Again, it's a excise tax on vehicles, the privilege to own a vehicle. That's a legal term of art, so it's an interesting term. Congestion pricing and pre-construction tolling. I do want to remind everybody that if you are allowed under the federal government to pre-construction toll someone like Abernathy Bridge, you must spend the funds for pre-construction tolling on Abernathy Bridge. You don't get to take them someplace else, and that's an important factor here. And so if you have a project funded like this, say like the Rose Quarter was partially funded and you did pre-construction tolling, any revenue you raised on the pre-construction tolling at Rose Quarter would have to go against the Rose Quarter fund or the project itself. This is a self-general fund supported. It has a 25% match, 1-to-4 match versus ODOT's normal 1-to-3 match that's on there. It is fenced statewide convention fund, as we talked about before, statutorily. We have to have discipline ourselves to make sure that we would not, you know, work outside of that. Initial list of projects we talked about are the big MPOs, the JPAC. Future projects would be identified initially. And there'd be secondary projects identified but not funded. And what the secondary projects that would be identified are those congestion projects that we've sort of identified around the state. And that doesn't guarantee funding for that entity. What it really does is if an MPO or another area identified, has for better word, a project identified on there, they would have to put forth a proposal through the Oregon Transportation Commission themselves, develop how they might fund their cost share of that, and then bring that to the Oregon Transportation Commission, and then from there, once it's done, they would have to come back through the state itself. So they come right back to the legislature. What we're doing is setting up a long-term mechanism for these types of projects so we have a flow of them coming in, and they, of course, would require, let me say, it would require normal legislative approval. And remember, we're now here on an annual basis. We're here for 5 months 1 year, 1 month the next year. The important part of this and how the structure of a fund like this would work is it's comprised of the OTC, which Oregon Transportation Commission, but also to ensure it has a balance of 30% membership on that oversight group that makes the recommendation and 20% from the cities. One of the discussions that we've had about accountability in this area, and we've not really come to a conclusion of this, the best way to do it, and that is the possibility of major fund projects of setting aside like 20% of it or 30% of it as a cost containment matter, and then have those, if the project was over cost, funded at 80% of its over cost, have them come back through OTC, the legislature, to explain why it's over budget. One of the challenges we have as legislators is, you know, we don't have the legislative staff at this time that can go out and tell us, well, if you want to build the Abernathy Bridge, the cost estimate for the legislature is XYZ. We don't have that capacity in-house to do that. A couple things of this project I didn't mention. This is another one that we should expect to be tested in court. Don't want anybody to be going into this with their eyes closed. It's a new concept. Every new concept gets tested no matter what. You write into the bill, if we decide to go forward, a direct route to the Supreme Court so we can get it over with quickly and figure out what it is we want to do. And then the question comes back, this, as with a gas tax or with a registration fee, is what sort of severability do we want to do? I mean, if we list projects and there's no funding for the projects because it's struck down, the question comes back is, what do we do? Do we fund those same projects and reward the individuals who sued you, or do we come back to the legislature and redesign it and say, we'll reallocate the funds? And that's something we're all going to have a discussion of in the very new future, like Wednesday. This is a list of the secondary projects that the list of the secondary projects that came out. Again, remember, the secondary projects were simply basically tickets to the ball. That's what they are. They're not an approval for a project. It allows one of those state MPOs or another area to come forth through the OTC process to say, we're interested in building this particular project. We would pay 50% of it or whatever the cost share of it is of theirs and bring it to the legislature. It doesn't guarantee that there's going to be a Portland 217 Phase 2, which is $50 million. What it does do is allow them to be able to come through the OTC back to the legislature and present their argument to us to go forward. One of the interesting things that did come up, you always learn surprising things. I just learned yesterday that there are actually three, if you don't know, JPAC, which is the Portland Metro MPO, actually includes Vancouver. And obviously we can't make decisions for the state of Vancouver, for Vancouver, the state of Washington. And then I did actually find out yesterday what I was not aware of. Sorry, committee members, I did send it to my committee, work group members, that we have three other, at least two, possibly three other MPOs out there that we weren't aware of. Senator Johnson's district has actually something that's called the Longview Kelso Rainier MPO, which actually includes Rainier, the Port of St. Helens, and some of the other area in her district that we weren't aware of that we need to identify and figure out what we're going to do. Also found that there's what's called the Walla Walla Valley, which is actually Milton Freewater and portions of Representative Smith's area that has an MPO, and we didn't even know that, which tells you after how many, a dozen work group meetings that we didn't have the list right, which is we're looking for you members here to help us out and identify any of these other areas that we need to include in this possibility of future options for them for major projects. Accountability work group, moving on to it. Thank Representative Olson and the other members that are there. What we've tried to do is there are many, many, many pages. I look across up here, and there are all kinds of members who have looked at stacks and stacks of pages of accountability, and what we tried to do is sort of summarize them there. If you look at the list that's up in front of you here, stronger legislative oversight, we discussed this. One of the options we put up is to make this committee permanent. That's been recommended several times here. Make it permanent and have policy and budget authority over transportation. Remember, if we're going to do a 20-year financing plan here, we want to make sure that we have oversight on an ongoing basis over the top of it. Require the OTC to provide the committee with biannual budgets and project lists and quarterly updates. If you remember, there is some statutory authority right now in place that if a project, for example, has a change order over a certain threshold, it has to go to the Oregon Transportation Commission for approval now. And given the fact that the legislature presently, if we fund, as example, Roads Corridor at $450 million, and we don't presently have the staff and the expertise to tell us whether that number is right or wrong, one of the important part is having the legislative oversight going forward, especially in these large sums of money in these large projects. Also put in an inspector general into ODOT. Require any ODOT inspector general reports to be provided to the committee. Expand and strengthen the OTC. This discussion that we had in the group of four of us to bring to you is the idea of moving it to seven members and have one, at least one from every ODOT region. And that would, I believe, five ODOT regions that are out there and leave several at large. OTC members serve the pleasure of the governor as now, but early termination only after a public hearing. That is a slight change from today. We have other boards and commissions that have that now. And again, what we're looking to do is maintain continuity in an organization that we're going to empower with billions of dollars that we've never done before. Small OTC staff, independent of the director, that's been discussed and was recommended from many of you. OTC appointment of the inspector general, independent ODOT director responsible for internal audits and handling consumer complaints. Basically, remember we talked about having a hotline and ensure that individuals should be able to call in and report something that they thought was wrong, and we need to have someone to handle that. This is in addition to, as you know now, the Secretary of State has a statewide line, but this is more specific to ODOT that's there. ODOT appointment of the ODOT director subject to Senate confirmation. OTC approves biannual budget and submission to the governor and legislature. Not much real change there. Establish joint stakeholder and internal management efficiency accountability committee. I think you heard this from Representative Olson's presentation and many of the other members that are there. Transparency. Once again, transparency on a statewide level for state, county, and city. And you remember we talked about standardizing project selection and review criteria. We also talked about standardizing our road evaluations. And that's ongoing right now. Even without this bill, city, county, and state folks working together to identify and come up with a single standard of, you know, what's a poor road, what's a fair road, what is the standardization we use across the state. Project status reporting against online again for transparency. Online summary of complaints and actions was recommended. So if somebody does make a complaint, that it doesn't just get lost. I unfortunately have, in fact, even as the state center occasionally called one of the hotlines here in Oregon and, you know, never even got a return phone call. And I'm a state senator. So that's it. Other related items related sort of to accountability, but to talk about. Once again, we said, you know, establish statewide reporting standards jointly with the cities and counties. That's ongoing right now. Clarifying city, county, and special district contracting standards. We've had discussions about that in other bills that are here in the legislature right now. Review regulatory obstacles for streamlining process and access to raw materials. I think we've heard, I think Senator Johnson has beaten that one fairly well, that, you know, we need to put into place and look at some of the existing regulatory issues that we have out there. Command centralization of rest areas to improve public perception. It's another bill that's in the joint committee here. The public needs to know, and their first deal, besides driving down the road and hitting our potholes now, is when they stop after hitting the pothole is to go to the bathroom. And we see plenty of complaints on this particular issue, and we sort of have a double standard. We have some that are very well maintained, and we need to bring the rest of them up to the same maintenance level that's out there. And then, of course, the other issue that is out there, not in this committee, but all of us are talking about that we need to be aware of, is cost transparency for low-carbon fuel standard. You do have some spreadsheets before you. I just want to outline. I'm going to give you that you have four spreadsheets before you, but there are simplified versions I'm going to put on the screen here. And again, these spreadsheets are broken down into the taxable groups that are there for you to consider over the next couple of days. There's a maintenance and preservation tax sheet, spreadsheet that has gas tax, title fees, registration fees, and licenses. I want to point out that licenses are basically a fee for service. They're not. We generally accept them. Even now, into the future, that, you know, licenses are something that pay for DMV, and they pay for the operation of DMV. Now, we did mention earlier that if we do pre-construction tolling and congestion pricing, that you would have a cost, an additional cost at DMV up front. And so that licensing fee is basically a cost for service. So you have one spreadsheet that's in maintenance and preservation we're going to go into. Congestion and freight is excise tax, pre-construction tolling, and congestion relief. That's a spreadsheet and an Excel spreadsheet you can all work with yourselves over the next couple of days. I think every one of you have the earlier version of this. Other than titles, there's no different from the present version than the older versions. And then there's a spreadsheet on multimodal and transit. We have some summaries that are up here. For example, this is the maintenance and preservation. And if you just look at it on the top of your sheet in front of you, as example, if the first year you instituted a 6 cent gas tax and then a $20 registration and title fee. I want to remind you that that's a rounding figure, and this is an estimating sheet. This is not legislative revenue telling us this is how much it's going to generate. This is an estimation. And again, what we're proposing is a three-tiered registration and title system, and so this is just a summary here. But you can see, for example, for maintenance and preservation, simply in the highway fund, if you did 6 cents the first year, then $20, $20, which is really three-tiered, 10, 20, 30, you raise about $312 million if that's what we decided to do. You'll notice every 2 years it's stair-stepped up. Instead of using CPI, it's the same spreadsheet that you literally saw in the committee hearings before. This is sort of a refresher to give it broken down to you to see what it looks like. In the congestion relief, if you did 1%, you can see the revenue stream. Once again, a 1% excise tax in the first year generates $73 million. And if you recall, initially, this is a 50-50 split for projects with the with the Portland metro area that's there. You have the detailed sheets that are this size right here that you can look at. And again, you have it electronically so you can play with it. So when we come back on Wednesday and start asking, are you comfortable with 6 cents or you want 4 cents or what do you want to do, we can start working through and changing those numbers as they go across. A simpler summary is on the PowerPoint that's there. This is the overall summary of what it looks like in the overall program, including the fuel tax registration titles. You'll notice, once again, tolling and congestion, we don't have a number in there. And the reason we don't have a number is we don't even have a setup at this point. And what our proposal is to do that setup, do the front, the back room setup for computerization, do the front end of it, and then start phasing ourselves into that so we can, instead of trying to gas tax our way out of congestion, that we can use a different mechanism. Questions for Wednesday. What we sort of envisioned tonight was to be able to have you look at how this flows together and then have some discussions amongst all of us throughout the next couple of days, and then on Wednesday go back to just the key slides that we have in here that are, do we agree or disagree? Do we think the metro projects, for example, are the way to go? Do we think that we ought to establish a fund? And just the key slides and sort of walk through on Wednesday. We've never done this before in my knowledge of the legislature. Was one of us sitting down here taking the heat rounds from the other 13 of you and trying to facilitate a discussion of, you know, what do we agree with, what do we disagree, what are our recommendations, and how might we go forward? We have provided you a list of sample questions that you have. And no, not every one of you will be asked the questions. These are decided. These questions are basically to give you food for thought, so you can look through the questions and the sort of answers. As example, I mean, do you agree with a small city plan in which, you know, we pay for half, they pay for half, and along that line? And then we'll, after that, sort of our goal is once we get somewhat of a consensus here, even though there's parts and pieces of legislation, you know, I guess you could say pre-drafted, to try and then task legislative council based on sort of the consensus that we have between all 14 members and go forward with there. With that, I'll turn it back over to Senator Beyer to close.
Well, this is the culmination of all the work that you've put in over the last year in getting there. These numbers, obviously they can change, but if we want to solve the transportation problem that the people told us they wanted to solve, this is what gets us there. This is the minimum that gets you there. It keeps the roads from failing, gets at the bridges, gets at the seismic issues. This is the piece that gets there. So with that, we're open for questions, or we can defer until Wednesday night. Clarifications.
Senators, I believe we have a question from Vice Chair Benz.
Actually, a couple of remarks. First, thank you for all the work. And also, I wanted to thank our ODOT staff for helping four of us try to gather this together and put this presentation together. And I also noticed we have some members of the OTC sitting here, and I really learned what an incredible amount of work they've done for this state holding this system together. I really don't understand how much work they've done until you go through something like this. So thank you for that work, Tammy, and others that might be here. The size of these numbers jump out at people. So some more context would be really helpful. For example, I didn't know until someone told me that it would cost some $400 million to replace the bridges that go over to West Salem. $400 million. And so when someone says this is an $8 billion program, some people might say, boy, that sure is huge, spread out over 10 years. But maybe you guys can share with us where that really fits in light of what does $8 billion do for the state? Does it fix everything? Can we say goodbye to congestion in Portland with $8 billion?
Certainly not. That's the problem. As you just pointed out, we'll just look at the Abernathy Bridge, which I think is around in the $250 million range, because you were giving an example. If you do the lane widening of the Abernathy Bridge, it's about $450 million. And as population continues to grow in Portland, and as business continues to expand, the congestion continues to pack itself in. As you've also mentioned, just a bridge. We have, you know, hundreds of bridges that we need to replace in the state of Oregon over the next decade. And what we're doing is making a down payment on that and trying to create a mechanism in which going forward, we can then, instead of coming back here every 2 to 3 years, and there's a lot of people like it the old way, let's come back every 2 or 3 years, and which is why we're now sitting on a stack of bridges that need to be replaced. Half of them were identified, Mr. Vice Chair, in your work group. And so what this does is gives us a starting place going down the road. But what it does do that we hope is in the tasking, is it empowers Oregon Transportation Commission then to turn around, because we the legislature are sort of giving them their marching orders for the next 3 to 6 years, is for them to come back to the legislature and say, okay, here is the path forward specifically over the next 20 years. This doesn't solve all the problems, and it certainly is not going to solve the congestion problem.
This is trying to take the long look at it, as we started out talking about trying to look out 20 years and start addressing some of this. It is one, as we all know, as legislators, we don't like to take votes on these things. The reality is we didn't come back every 2 years. It's about a decade between each vote. So this kind of gets to that point a little bit. If we do this one, future legislators won't have to take another vote for a decade on the transportation system. But it builds up, and it doesn't do it all at once. I mean, the stepping in process, that's too much for the public to assume all at once, but it steps in slowly. We will still be left with the cost for transportation that's less than most of the other states. Still be less, and it does move us back more towards a user pay system. I think the one thing we learned is that public in general, Representative Vance brought this up a lot on the tours, and we'd ask them, how much do you think you pay to drive your car? And we'd get the $1,000 to $2,000 a year range, and what we found out is that the average cost that Oregonians pay to drive is about $157 a year. That's what it costs them in fees and gas tax to drive on the road. Some more than that, obviously, some less. So this gets us there, but Representative, you're right. You know, we were talking, one we talked about when we looked at the project that's on the cover, actually, this thing, the Woodburn project. When we finished that one, before they did that project at Christmas time, we had people stopping in the center lane on I-5 and certainly backing up for 2 miles on the inside lane, or the outside lane, I guess it'd be. That project was over $80 million. The one right behind it, the Aurora interchange, that we're starting to see the same kind of things happening now, is again projected to be in the $60 to $80 million range. They're all in that, these things cost a lot, and I think people think of them as government projects. But remember that transportation in Oregon is probably the most privatized public service that there is. We don't, the public agencies don't build things. It all goes out to low bid contract for the most part. So these are real costs. It's just what it is, and it's real expensive to maintain the system. I'm reminded driving back and forth daily now from Springfield to the Capitol, the work that they're doing south of here, the road, it's just torn up, torn to heck, and we've seen that in the north end, so it's there. I put it in context. I was thinking about this the other day, and when I started making the trip up here in 91, the traffic in Wilsonville was about a third of what it is now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The traffic that I'm seeing going from Salem going south now is about what it was then when I first started coming up here going north to Salem. And that's just going to continue. And if you think about Portland, the metro area in 2015 alone grew by 27,000 people. That's a lot more tires on the road and a lot more congestion to deal with than that. Our trip brought home to me the complaint that the businesses, wherever we went in Oregon, the solid complaint that we have heard from everybody was how much it was costing them to get through the metro area. And we forget sometimes that we are an exporting state, and all the freight, the economy of Oregon, has to go that way. And to the extent we're stopping it, we're hurting our job expansion, we're hurting the economy of the state. So it's an issue, and it's just a question of, do we want to address it or not?
I think follow-up?
Yeah, well, just a short comment. We did, as you know, price out what it would cost to add an additional lane from Salem down to Albany. on going each way. So two lanes at $990 million.
Yeah.
Just to add a lane to the two lanes that are there now. That's the perspective I wanted, that context I wanted, so thank you very much.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. First of all, I want to thank the two of you for your presentation and thank our two co-chairs and vice chairs for all their hard work. And I want to echo Representative Vince in complimenting our Transportation Commission and all the hard work they do. I also want to compliment Director Garrett. I think he's done a very admirable job in leading the department. One of the challenges I've had as we work through intermodal is I felt compartmentalized in that I got to focus on intermodal and not be able to participate in the conversations in the other three committees. And committee members, I compliment you for the work you've done in the other three areas. One of the things I've yet to hear, and maybe I missed it, and I want somebody to correct me, is I haven't heard about the opportunity we're going to have potentially, I underline potentially, to take this course of work and to leverage it with federal dollars. Hmm. If folks will recall, President Trump talked about infrastructure development was the highest priority. And to me, it seems as if our work focuses on us doing the lift alone without participation from our federal partners. And I don't know if we need to discuss it this evening, but perhaps, Matt, this is something that we can address at a future meeting, talking about how do we take these dollars and do what I believe is smart government, and that's leverage it with our federal partners to get the biggest bang for the buck. And again, I'm not asking for an answer right now, but I do think that's something we need to have a conversation on in the future of how do we make sure we're maximizing our rate of return, especially when we know we're going to be asking hardworking Oregonians to help pay for this infrastructure development.
I can take that on right now. If you go back to slide 30 on your sheet in front of you, one of the key pillars of the present administration's plan to go forward is public-private partnerships. And what they have signaled to every state in the union at this point is that they intend to leverage, to get to this trillion-dollar number, if that's the magic number, Representative Smith, is that they intend to leverage public-private partnership and that of tolling and congestion pricing, which we studied in depth and had a large discussion on our side. The other thing is obviously the problem that they have. I think there's a number throwing out there. I mean, the federal government, somebody out there in the last couple of weeks have proposed like a 36-cent gas tax increase in the federal government. Because the problem we faced is in the recent transportation plan that was approved by the Congress, they were very nice to say that they were going to make a transportation plan, but they failed to put money behind it. And so at this point, what we have heard in all the discussions is, which is why it is imperative, though it is unpopular, that's what legislators get paid for, it is imperative and unpopular to look at pre-construction tolling and the issue of congestion pricing, because that will be integrated into the future transportation plan coming out of the present administration. But you're absolutely correct. That's one of the leveraging points. That's why we put it in here. It takes about 2 years to basically set up the capability in the back room to do something like this. And we want to be prepared, Representative Smith, if they say, hey, where are the 10 projects in the country we can use as symbolic? We want to have the mechanism like our brethren across the state in the state of Washington, where they have the back room and the setup so they can take advantage of that. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the discussions we're having right now, and thanks again, kudos to Director Garrett for leaning forward in the foxhole here, is discussions with our colleagues at the federal government on this issue and discussions with the state of Washington of if we have to get a back room really fast to take advantage of that, how do we do it and how could that be contracted out maybe with our neighbors across the river?
So just following up, and so I appreciate that. It's just those of us in Ways and Means know that that those federal opportunities go far beyond just major projects, and that there's opportunities for counties and cities and for our ports to take advantage of that. The last thought is, and so I just think it needs to be part of our overall conversation. And I think that would make some of us comfortable to know that we're leveraging those dollars to the maximum extent. The second thing I think it's really important we do is we ask the question, how is the proposal that we've, as a committee, put together, how is this going to fit with our existing work that's already going on? How is that going to complement what we already have going on and those opportunities? And I think we've had part of that conversation this evening, but I think we need to make sure we don't lose sight of that work as well, especially the good works that are that is going on within our area commissions on transportation and the work they're doing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Well, I'm going to follow up on that theme. And the first two questions started at the 100,000-foot level with the cost of projects and the leverage. I'm going to drop way down into the weeds now and follow up on Senator or Representative Smith. And that is, you have redefined in this proposal, and thank you for all your hard work, but you have redefined in this proposal a number of different ways of doing things. And I'm wondering to what degree you will expect the committee to help with the rules of the road. You have empowered a number of advisory groups, and I use that, LOC and AOC, don't freak out. I'm just saying that there are now different people setting the table. And my question is, how are those decisions made? Safe routes to school, even the amount of money that you've allocated, there'll probably be more need than there is money. The arts program, who will decide that? How do the bike ped programs get decided? And at what point are cities and counties partners in some of the linear trails? I can think of some that were proposed in Connect that were not very popular as they plowed through farmland. Who decides about the derelict vessels? What are the new rules of the road for Connect Oregon? Because that's been substantially changed, and I agree with the changes. But we don't need to discuss it now, but I just lift up for your consideration as we change, thank you, Representative Smith, our established ways of doing things, how are the new rules for the road articulated to make sure that there are not winners and losers. I mean, not everybody has to have their project done first. But if you're going to patiently wait your turn in the barrel, I think you need to know that there are objective standards to get to number one, that you do have a fighting chance to get to number one, and that you can do the kind of planning that a great big package like this would require so that if a small municipality has to come up with a match, that they've got adequate time to begin pulling that match together. Yeah. So my question writ large is, what will be the process for defining the new rules of the road?
So,
to use a transportation analogy. Mm-hmm. To use a transportation analogy.
Rules of the road. I've seen that sticker someplace. not all of that is defined, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
To a large extent, the two of the ones you suggested, the arts program, which is a safety program, is well established in ODOT. And the system there essentially runs through the OTC, and I think they have a committee to do that. Didn't intend to change that. The problem was just insufficient funding to get at the problem. Similar with the Safe Routes to Schools, that program already exists. No need to duplicate that. The one that's out there, the expansion of the Small Cities Program, the concept there, quite frankly, listening to you a lot, complaining about how much it costs to do that, is our thought is to transfer the decision-making to cities. Put a group together and let them figure that out, and ODOT would just manage it rather than, you know, letting the department and the OTC get beat up by, you know, whose turn it is. Let them figure it out.
I love that. And the analogy would be when the community colleges all took the fight into the hermetically sealed room and they slugged it out among the family and they came back with their prioritization and recommendations. I think that would diminish the amount of bureaucracy. And I am extrapolating from your comment the fact that if small city A gets their opportunity to get funded, they would select the project, they'd manage the project, so we don't have this at the end when there's an inevitable issue. I like that idea very much, and to cut down on some of the bureaucracy and sort of the caprice of why are we doing traffic calming in NHTSA? No disrespect, Representative, but from our trip, that one stands out in my mind. Other than the flood of traffic leaving Oregon to go to work in Idaho every morning and coming home from Idaho, I just don't get traffic calming in a town of 2,700.
Yeah. The one thing we realized, and I mean, frankly, Representative Bentz was very good at really pointing this out, as were you, Senator, is that the amount of money under the standard formula that the small cities are getting, you know, it takes them like 5 years to get enough to pave a block.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe it makes more sense to put that there. And frankly, we put a lot more money on the table if this is approved.
Cool.
Thank you, Representative McClain.
Well, I wanted to thank you for what I think you demonstrated, which is that when we looked at this, we were looking for long-term planning and also for a balanced and, you know, portfolio of investment in transportation in the state of Oregon. And as we talked on Wednesday, I hope that we could remember that we said that was our goal, that we wanted to have a balanced package and that we wanted to make sure we were taking care of all parts of the system, whether it be bridges that are crumbling or whether it be, you know, trails or safe pathways to school or transit or ports or dealing with congestion choke points, that if we want this to work, we have to have something there for all parts of the system. And then the other element was that I thought that the cities and the counties were fabulous in sticking with us on keeping the formula the way it was 20, 30, 50, to basically allow us to have something we could depend upon and also help us fix the small county and the small city area by offering up some of their own dollars for those needy partners. And I think that can go without, you know, a thank you, because I think that will help this package be successful if we can, you know, keep that element there. And then the other item was the fact that really when we're doing a package of this size, people kept telling us, be bold, make it worthwhile, you know, looking for new tools, looking for new ways to finance. And so I do think that the pre-construction tolling and, you know, those types of things are really important, because I think, you know, we don't want to be left behind. You point out that Washington already has their back room, and they can get some of those grants that are coming out sooner. And so it's really important for us to really keep that in mind and go forward with some of those other opportunities that give us good partnering with the federal partners. But I just hope that as we're looking at your questions that you presented to us, that we remember the framework and remember that we're going to have to do some good messaging on why this is tiered and stepped and not going to be all put out there at one time. And somebody made a comment about, you know, it's important for us to do better bonding. We've got a good bonding rate, but it's important for us to do better bonding. Well, we do better bonding if we use cash up front on the shorter, smaller projects, and we allow for a smaller bonding package. And so I think and hope that that's one of the things that we're going to talk about on Wednesday on how we can do that with that 10-year program.
Thank you, Representative.
Anyone else? I think there's one message, too, I want to make sure that isn't lost on this entire body of work that has come out of this year-long process, and that's the continued concept that we're hearing about skin in the game, everybody doing their part. And if you look at whether it's the transit piece, whether it's safe routes to schools, whether it's the bike tax, whether it's the partnership between the excise tax, which is collected statewide, helping partner with the MPO in the Portland area to pay for the large projects, because congestion impacts everyone across the state, but everyone will be paying their fair share to make sure that the projects are done. Connect Oregon has a match. I just think it's important that we continue to recognize, too, that we're asking everybody to do their part here, and I just want to make sure that that message wasn't lost. Any other comments for tonight?
Madam Chair,
Senator Beyer.
You know, discussing revenue increases, taxes, is never easy for a legislative body, but I think we should keep in mind the context of the environment we're in. All the states in the last 2 years or more have been talking about underfunding their transportation system. Every state around us in the last 2 years has increased their transportation funding stream. Every state, over half of the states in the United States in the last 2 years have increased their funding stream for that. Largely, we all know that's because Congress has not acted. Maybe they will in the future. If they do, to represent Smith's points, if they, you know, if they raise the tax 36% and 36 cents and decide to share that, we certainly, as a legislature, could reduce the package if it made sense to do that. But we have to keep in context is the history is not good on getting money from Congress. So we have a responsibility to maintain the system, and we know what the state it's in.
Senator Johnson.
I would, not for this evening, but very much appreciate on Wednesday the opportunity to visit with what happens if there is an expedited review at the Supreme Court of the excise tax and it fails. And what is the fallback position should our metropolitan MPO partners not be successful in moving the bonds that they would need to move in order to be full partners in those big metro projects?
Well, Madam Senator, it's going to be an interesting Wednesday evening.
And before we adjourn tonight, I'd like to recognize Chair Bainey. She's here tonight, or she was. She's still here. Thank you, Tammy, for all of your work and to make sure. We also thank Representative Vile and Representative Brock Smith, who joined us. They've been stalwarts in making sure they're keeping an eye on what's going on, and we appreciate their attention to this as well. And thank you all who were kind enough to give us your Monday and Wednesday evenings for weeks on end in the work groups. A number of you have spent a lot of time down here helping us work through a very complex process, and what you're seeing tonight is the culmination of all your work as well, and we're very grateful for your participation. Unless we have any further comments, gentlemen. Yes, Senator Boquist.
Colleagues, again, Wednesday night's going to be the success or failure night, and we intentionally gave you paper slides to take home with you so you didn't have to glow in the dark looking at these. I would encourage you to write your notes down and all the questions and issues that you have, because this will probably be the only time I've seen a legislative committee function like we're going to end up functioning on Wednesday night. And so Senator Johnson's already raised some good questions already. Representative Smith points out we need to strengthen our federal piece on that side. And so I look forward to being the target of your rage on Wednesday night, sitting out here as we try and facilitate an open discussion of what we do next.
Parked a couple of more follow-ups. Senator Johnson?
Let me just ask, using another aviation analogy, is there air traffic control for these questions? Has one of the chairs or the co-chairs the designated point person? Or because what I'm looking out over this audience, and I'm already picturing how many requests there are going to be for meetings between now and Wednesday night, and I'm trying to figure out how do we get the amalgam of all of our questions to the attention of our four fearless leaders, so that there's some degree of order as they come forward, or do you just want us to hit you with our best shot?
I believe,
Madam,
Senator
your best
Boquist.
Shot is probably not good enough, so you might as well bring it anyway. Because I would encourage those of you who are very articulate and those of you who have laundry lists, it'd be nice to have them in advance so we can narrow them down. But, I mean, the basic intent, so you know, is we're going to go delete lots of the slides you saw that have the fluff in them, have the basic slides up there with the questions, and not really put members on the spot, but just go around and have a discussion. And Representative Smith has raised the issue of federal. How do we address that? What are our ideas? What else do we want? And I would envision we'll actually have several of the drafters in the room Wednesday night to take notes, too, so that we're in a position. And this is, again, this is pretty virgin territory for us to try and do it this way. It's just how we've been tasked to do it, and since all, as the minority member, all my bills are dead, I'm the scapegoat to do it.
Senator, I think we have a volunteer to be the point person, and I believe it is Senator Boquist.
But I would just say, keep in mind that we're starting to run out of runway. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to make some. We do have to make some decisions. We do have to move it ahead so we can have the bill drafted and vote on it before July 10th.
And I would, we will be, once the bill is drafted and this work is complete, there will be public hearings held as
yes.
well. So I wanted to make sure that we make note of that. So our time is getting shorter. So
with the committee.
Yes. 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 Vice Chair Vance.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think, Senator, so you need to put a finer point on it so that this committee understands that it's going to have to speak up and say where it is. There's no more hanging back. There's no more hiding in the weeds. There's no more waiting on Wednesday night. If you don't know enough, that's going to be a problem, because these two guys in this committee has to know what you're thinking, because we're to it. So I think you need to be a little more clear in saying, Senator, you're going to be asking what each member of this committee wants, and if they don't like it, they need to speak up. I mean, we've reached that point, is what I'm trying to say. You guys seem to be tiptoeing around it, and I don't think we have time to do that anymore. Now, if I've misstated that, if there's a whole bunch more time lurking there someplace that I don't know about.
Madam Chair, Co-Chair Bence, there's all kinds of time between now and Wednesday evening, but Wednesday evening, the buck's going to stop right here, and decisions will be made.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. With all due respect to the good representative from Ontario, we've been hit with a lot of information this evening. Again, many of us have been compartmentalized. So we're going to need a little time to go through this and to make sure that this is right, not only for our district, but for the state of Oregon. So I stand ready to be an active participant on Wednesday, but to ask me to raise my hand in support in 48 hours, that's asking a lot from us.
Madam Chair. So that's what I was afraid would be the case if someone didn't call this out clearly. How much time do you need?
Well, I need to read the bill.
How about a week from Wednesday?
Well, let's take a look at it. I mean, in all fairness, I have the intermodal section down.
So what I'm saying is, these guys, we have to place this before everybody. We've got to reach now. Obviously, day after tomorrow is way too soon. When is a good day?
Well, it would be irresponsible for me to commit to this type of legislation in 48 hours.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you.
I would suggest, keep in mind that these ideas didn't come from us. They came from us.
And I strongly agree, but keep in mind, some of us just worked in one of four compartments.
So, following on this line of questioning, it's different sitting here talking about concepts versus looking at the four corners of the bill. And I'm glad that there will be public hearings to get to see the four corners of the bill. And at that point, maybe Representative Smith finds some comfort. My question is a little bit more focused. I have seen a draft that came from the good work of Representative Olson's accountability. Will the concepts of accountability be folded into this bill, or will that be done separately?
Be part of the bill.
Okay. Senator Winters.
Oh, I was going to ask the accountability question, so you answer.
Thank you, Chairman. Senator Taylor. I just wanted to support what Representative Smith mentioned, and that I just want to make certain that we have an appropriate amount of time to look at it, and I definitely, at least as an individual, would like to have more than Wednesday to make any strong commitments.
I think the idea for Wednesday is to conceptually give a nod to the main tenets of what is proposed here. We won't have a draft of the bill until there is some agreement to the concept so we can actually go have it drafted. That's why we will be holding public hearings once the bill is actually complete, which will take some time. So am I characterizing that correctly,
Madam
John?
Chair, I think you're characterizing the question we're going to figure out Wednesday night is this, but we're going to give the final the final green light to legislative council to draft something. And, you know, we need to be closer to a finished product in terms of what do we conceptually agree. For example, I mean, if all 14 members say no, we should probably not spend more than just say hypothetically 4 cents, or no, we shouldn't generally go in partnership with Portlandia. We sort of need to know that before we draft the bill. Now, I am 100% with Representative Smith in saying, you know, death is in the details of the bill, and you want to see it before that. But what we need to do is at least come to a conclusion so the poor legislative drafters downstairs have an idea of what it is they're doing. Other than the four of us magically trying to interpret what the 10 of you have said. And so what we'd hope for Wednesday night is an open communications of individuals saying, you know, I have a problem with this idea, or I don't have a problem with this idea, so we kind of go forward from there. Other than that, I mean, unfortunately, I think the draft of this is going to be hundreds of pages.
Senator Taylor.
I'm good.
Oh, okay.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative Olson.
Okay, so that you kind of threw out that question, Senator Beyer, about the accountability piece. I guess I was always of the impression we were going to have two separate bills rather than to fit them both in. And then the other thought is, why don't we look really hard at this whole thing Monday night? Give us a full week.
Representative Vance.
Can you go over our schedule again, kind of put in context where we are so everybody kind of knows the time frame within which
it's very rough. Yeah. I mean, there are pieces of it that the LCs, there's about five of the attorneys that are working on different pieces now, and hopefully they'll come together. But based on the direction that we give them on Wednesday, or if it goes later, our perspective is that the LC tells us that they need about 2 weeks from when we finalize that to get a draft for us to see. And the draft will be not like what you usually see. It'll be a quote. It'll be an unedited draft, truly a draft piece of legislation to give them time to get it through the things and changes at that point. Then that will get you to a bill, if we have agreement, that will show up on the House floor somewhere in early June, and on the Senate floor probably a week or so later than that. So there's not a lot of freeboard if we're going to pass anything here. So we can make, you know, we can alter things, but we're going to have to make decisions fairly rapidly if we're going to get it together, because, again, the attorneys need some time to put it all together.
Senator Johnson.
I promise I'm trying to be helpful, although it has appearance of being a pain someplace. my question to you is, let's just pick an element of this bill that I've been outspoken on, and that's the aggregate tax. Mm-hmm. How will we decide that? Of the 14 of us, if 12 say it needs to go and out of the bill, and two hold out, how do we get over the fact that maybe we are not going to reach consensus? And are there opportunities for minority report? I mean, how complicated are we going to get this? Is it a simple majority, or how's it going to work?
Well, Madam Senator, I can count. And 12 against it isn't going to make the aggregate tax fly. Okay, it won't get off the runway. And I think that's the sort of discussion you've got to have on Wednesday and on Monday, to figure out what's the realm of possibilities here. For example, why would we draft it? If all 10 of you say, nope, we all suddenly hate Portlandia, and we're not going to go 50-50 on any project on them on Wednesday night, why would we finish drafting anything? We just give Alan Dale a day off. He could go have, you know, a good cocktail and come back and draft the rest of our legislation. So that's the sort of effort that we're going to have to kind of get a consensus of, because as Representative Smith points out, everybody's been working sort of in the stovepipe. What we've done is deconflict the four groups and try and make an innovative presentation here. And now we have some conceptual ideas. But I think you raise a good issue. If 12 people say no, I can count. You can't get it out of committee with 12 people saying no. So why are we going to go forward with that particular piece if that's the case?
And, you know, this is the standard legislative end of thing. There will be something probably for everybody to like and something for everybody to dislike. But the question is, when you put it all together, can you vote for it?
Senator Winters.
I think it's very important, though, that even the dislikes, if there's a majority who dislike it, that it doesn't get into the proposal. And I think that's the issue that's being raised. Mm-hmm. You know, we did operate in silos, and so it will take time for members to embrace all five of those silos. And, you know, I share the concern that was raised by good Representative Smith that, you know, we do need to be able to digest some of it, even though I've got the expert, you know, from that sitting there that I can go and probably been a lot of years. But I do think that it is these issues that are raised. One, does majority prevail? That's very, very important to me. And two, because, you know, and is it that conceptually we're voting on it conceptually, which means that we're not bound by what we, the concepts that we vote on? So those are questions, I think, that are running in the minds of individuals as we sit here.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, we are certainly in virgin territory because we've never done a committee in the round ever before in this legislature that I know of. But
giving birth is hard.
Yes.
I will concede that I do not know.
Sometimes the old smoke-filled rooms don't look that bad.
Chair, Vice Chair Benz.
So I hate to keep bringing this up, but since we have, as the four of us have gone through this for 3 weeks, three or four nights a week, trying to get this, what you guys just saw, up on the board, we are now. And it took this is one boatload of work. In case people haven't guessed. And thus, to get to this point leaves less time, I think, that all of us would really, really like to have. So the reason I'm asking for a finer point on Wednesday is to prompt everybody up here to reflect upon the fact that you're not going to be able to take 2 or 3 weeks to think about this, because, sadly, the product has taken quite a while to get to this point. Now, let's just go through the numbers again. Today is the 8th. Wednesday is the 10th. And that leaves us basically half a month for our people to get this drafted, and suddenly we're holding public hearings in early June. We have a couple of three public hearings, and now this is on the floor of the House on June 15th or 20th. And, gee, we're kind of running out of time. So I am just saying this because take as long as you want, as long as it's not over about a week. And then if you want to dwaddle a little longer, then dwaddle. But I'm just trying to say, don't shove this into a corner and forget it until Sunday night. I'm just saying. That's why I asked these two to speak up a little more clearly, because we are running out of time. Sorry about that, Representative Smith.
So
you can take all the time you like as long as it's
on ways it means. On that note... Oh, Senator Johnson, did you have another comment?
One more question, because none of us are particularly shy in retiring. I'm just wondering if there's going to be an order to go through the actual numbers. And I don't know whether there's an expectation that, let's assume that we can't reach consensus on something, a chance to negotiate instead of, I just picked one out, a Class C license increase fee of $1. Maybe 50 cents. I mean, are you looking for that kind of give and take among this committee?
I think the answer is yes. Conceptually, of like, okay, I'm uncomfortable. It's too much too soon along that line. Or I think we should extend it out and make it longer. Some basic conceptual things so that the poor drafters in the basement, when they come back with a draft, that we can all then take our red ink paint out, that they have a little bit of guidance, because you could remember they've been hermetically sealed in the room with four people who are just about ready to just about ready not to be together, okay? Because we've been hermetically sealed in this room. And so now we want to get some of your participation in this, of the same sorts of things that we've been talking about conceptually. Is like, okay, is it too big? Is it too small? Should it be spread over a bigger time? Is the gas much too high? And if you go back and simply look at the slides you have, you can easily, every one of you is a very smart person, you can look at the slides and figure out, we're probably not going to look at this slide that's up on the screen right now, right? And we're not going to look at this slide right here. But when you get to a couple of slides that start talking about, right, you know, okay, in numbers, do we want to do a 20-year plan, or do we just want to do a 3-year plan? Do we want to, you know... And that's the sort of guidance we're going to have to give to them, because we've put it together the best we've heard, and now we're looking for your input to tell us, nope, that's not what I said. This is what I meant when I said what I said. And then give it some direction to go forward. And, of course, the weeds are in the detail, and no one's going to vote for a bill until they see the weeds, and they never do. But that's sort of what we're talking about, Senator Johnson. It's not Thank like, you. No, I'm ironclad. It's got to be 29 cents here and 67 cents there. It's that, you know, I'm uncomfortable with this, or I'm not along that line.
Thank you. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to throw out the idea that we all come prepared on Wednesday to each speak in, to start off, if we are physically capable of being fairly concise and kind of walking through, guided by these questions, the five sections. What are the strengths? What are the, from each of our perspectives? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? What are particular things that you feel very strongly one way and another, and we walk through, we get a, we see what the sense is from there, and then we decide, is this enough? Do we roll over to Monday? I mean, I think that original, just to kind of go back to what I think the original thought was, I think that is workable, given that we don't know at the end of that 2 hours whether we will feel like we've kind of all had our piece and are getting to a place where the four of you and or the drafters can move forward, or we need to have those couple more days, those more thorough, you know, diving into the weeds before we move forward. I think the idea of using, having a managed conversation on Wednesday, if we all kind of focus, I think that can be, I think that's a great next place to go.
Anyone else? Representative McLean?
I was just simply going to say, I think all of us have had an opportunity to look at all four of the subgroups, and I know that, you know, looking at this, that we saw what it would take to get what we said we wanted as far as an overall package. So it's important in those comments, no matter if it's Wednesday or next Monday, that we sort of line up what we're willing to see as pay or what kind of, you know, basic tools we're willing to use, and that it matches up with the project that we all said we wanted. So I'm hoping that we can at least have the goals as well as the particulars, really, in some of our comments, both of them.
I need a drink.
So come prepared Wednesday for a good conversation.
I plan to stay for a while.
Mm-hmm. Longer than 2 hours.
It's camping time. Bring your beds.
We're adjourned.